the chant just now, the world is swept away, it does not endure, offers no shelter, there's no one in charge. One has to pass on, leaving everything behind. If you read it one way, or listen to it one way, it sounds like a series of complaints. But actually, it's the answer that a young monk gave one time to a king who asked him, why did you ordain? The king was familiar with people who ordained because they had loss in terms of their family or their wealth or their health, or they'd gotten old. In this young monk's case, he was still young, his family was wealthy, his relatives were still alive. So the king wanted to know, why did you ordain? And this was a series of reasons that Ratapala, that's the name of the monk, gave to the king. So in his case, it wasn't complaints, it was just a way of noticing this is the way most happiness in the world is. And the question is there something better? And so he set out to find it. The important point is that he didn't stop with the complaints. We all learn at an early age, if you complain, you get attention, you get sympathy. And for many of us, that's the way we deal with our sufferings. There are even cases where people don't want to be told a way to solve the suffering, they just want the sympathy. And our society is getting better and better at complaints, and we tend to fight over who has the right to complain. To complain about their situation, their status, the way they're treated by other people. A whole series of reasons that everybody has to complain. It's almost like a contest. Who has complaining rights? Who doesn't have complaining rights? And you tend to notice that the more comfortable things get, the more people complain. As your expectations rise, reality doesn't keep up with them. And people can feel that they're very sophisticated. They can see things to complain about that other people don't see. So complaining is a real art. And fighting over complaining rights would be something worth fighting over if complaining actually solved the problem, solved your suffering. But it doesn't. In fact, it actually gets in the way. This is not that we shouldn't notice the suffering. We should. In fact, as the Buddha said, that's one of the first things you want to learn, is to notice where genuine suffering, where genuine stress is. But you want to see the cause. And the word for cause, or origination there, simudhya, means something that arises together with the stress. And if you spend your time complaining, you don't see what's arising together with the stress. The complaint has gotten in the way. So it's actually an obstacle on the path. We have to get our duties straight here. As the Buddha said, suffering or stress is something you want to comprehend if you want to put an end to it. He called it a duty, but it's a duty that no one is imposing on you. The fact of suffering itself imposes the duty. But you're free to say, no, I'm just going to continue to suffer. I have other issues, other things that are more important to me. But if you agree with the Buddha that suffering is the big problem in life, and you put an end to it, this is what you've got to do. You've got to comprehend it. As for the cause, you've got to abandon it. So you can realize the cessation of suffering, and you do that by developing the path. Because it's through the path, especially the factors of mindfulness and alertness, that get strengthened with your concentration. That's what allows you to really comprehend the suffering, to see where it's connected with the cause, and to see the cause in time. Because this is a lot of the trick of seeing the connection, and seeing the reality of this connection, is that every time that particular cause comes, and it's going to be craving of one kind or another, there's going to be stress, and the two are connected. Just that it's difficult to comprehend suffering because we want to get rid of it. And oftentimes that craving, as Ratapala noticed, the world is a slave to craving. It's something we really like. We would prefer that there were no connection between the two, so we could hold on to the craving and get rid of the suffering. It's like seeing a coyote run past, and the coyote's been eating avocados like the coyotes here at the monastery, and its tail is really nice and bushy. You like the tail, you want to grab the tail and shake the coyote off the tail. Of course, the coyote is going to turn and bite you. You have to figure out the more you shake it, the more the coyote should be shaken loose from the tail, and it's not. It's not going to happen. You have to see that if you grab the tail, you're going to get bitten by the coyote. And if you look carefully at the tail, you're going to see it's really not worth all that much. It was just a flash that looked interesting. But when you actually have a coyote tail, it's nothing you can do much with. You've got to see that these things are connected. You grab the tail, there's going to be trouble. And there's nothing much to show for the trouble. We sometimes think that if we can get other people's sympathy for our suffering, or at least express our suffering to the world, then the suffering wouldn't have been in vain. But again, that desire to get the sympathy is going to stand in the way of your seeing. Well, this is what I'm actually doing that's causing the suffering. And the doing is very subtle, which is why you have to get the mind really still when you concentrate. Because there are a lot of little subtle movements in the mind that we tend to miss otherwise. As if we're running around singing a song to ourselves and at the same time trying to listen to the sound maybe of, say, mice in the wall or something. Well, as long as you're singing the song, you can't hear the sound of the mice. You've got to stop singing the song. Got to get very quiet. So we focus on the breath. Try to make the breath as smooth as silk. So it feels good coming in, feels good going out, and there are not a lot of bumps or a lot of distractions. So the mind can get used to being with something smooth and continuous. So it gets used to being smooth and continuous. It's not jumping around all the time. Then when the mind is still, then you can start seeing things more clearly. And particularly you want to look for where there is a rise and fall in the level of stress, even in that concentration. And also see, what did I just do at the same time that that stress rose? What did I stop doing when it fell? You look for that again and again and again, because it's going to take a while to see it. One of the reasons we not only get the mind still, but all around, is because sometimes the connection is not immediately obvious, or it's not in the place where we thought we should look. But if you get an all-around awareness, you begin to see, okay, this little movement of the mind, which registered as also a little movement in the body someplace, may not be directly in the same spot as the stress, but it arises at the same time and it passes away at the same time. And particularly when you look for perceptions, little messages that the mind sends to itself. Either visual images or words, or a simple tone of voice. These are often the things that cause the stress, because you cling to a particular type of perception. The perception comes up, you grab hold of it, there is the stress. You let go of it, and it goes, the stress is gone. You want to see that connection. Because that's the only way that you're going to be able to abandon the cause. Because as long as you don't see these things clearly, you don't know what to abandon. As I said, you're trying to abandon stress all the time. Well, it's like trying to abandon the coyote by shaking its tail and hoping that the coyote gets detached from the tail. So we're here to solve this one particular problem, to see that it really is important. And it's also very easy to say, well, there are other things that are more important. There's the suffering of other people out there. Who's going to help with that? Well, the people who've solved their own suffering are in a much better position to help others solve theirs, because they've seen what's actually involved. And at that point, you've learned not to be the sort of person who complains in order to get other people's sympathy. So when you're helping them, you're not helping them for the sake of their sympathy either. You're helping them because you see this is what needs to be done. If they're receptive, you're happy to do it. If they're not receptive, you've got to develop some equanimity. But you're operating from knowledge rather than a quid pro quo. I think I sympathize with you, you'll sympathize with me. Sympathy is not a bad thing, but our desire for it, our demand for it, can often get in the way of solving the problem of our suffering. So when that complaining voice comes up in the mind, that's one of the things you got to drop. And if the mind resists it, you've got to learn how to cut through all the connections that keep you tied to it. Otherwise, you're going to be a slave to that craving. Then you'll be stuck in this world where nothing endures. There's no shelter, no one in charge, nothing of your own. In other words, a world of inconstancy, stress, and not self. The question sometimes arises, what's the connection between the Four Noble Truths and the Three Characteristics, as they're often called? Well, they're actually tools for performing the duties of the Four Noble Truths. They don't come under any one particular truth. You apply them to the stress, so you can see the arising and falling of the stress. Then you apply them to the cause. You see that's arising and falling too. Eventually, when the path has done its work, you use those perceptions on the one hand to keep you on the path. You apply those perceptions to everything else but the path. And then when the path has done its work, you apply those perceptions of the path as well. And that's when you've got the full realization of the cessation of suffering. That's when you put everything aside, including those perceptions. So these are our duties. And you want to make sure that your complaining doesn't get in the way. We're all very good at complaining. It turns out that's one of our skills that keeps us tied to suffering. So learn how to recognize that there is suffering, but don't let the complaint get in the way of seeing the cause and letting go of the cause. These things happen very quickly, so the less baggage you carry around, the better it's going to be. And our habit of complaining very quickly and very easily, that's part of the baggage.